that's you know, Oregon is really a great homegrown story of remarkable enterprise.
You know, I think everybody's feeling the stress of meeting the need.
I'm at the University of Oregon for political science. And what do you do with a political science degree? You start a business.
There you go.
Here we are.
There you go.
Hi, this is Dr. Bud Pierce, and welcome to Oregon Crossroads. We've got a lot happening in terms of the COVID-19 pandemic. It seems timely at this time to update you on what's really happening in the trenches and on the ground. So the first thing I would say is Oregonians are doing great. We're the fifth least in the number of deaths. That's good. Every death, tragic. We want to prevent everyone that we can, but being fifth best in the nation is quite good. We're at 788 deaths out of 4.2 million people, as I report to you today. And again, that's a very, very good number. When you look at our total number of cases that have been identified in Oregon, about 60,000, probably at least 10 times that many people have been infected. And again, that's an important number to know as we think about working clear of this pandemic. And we can see that light at the end of the tunnel with the announcement about the vaccines, which we'll mention here going forward. Again, there's a lot being made about hospital capacity and there's no beds and et cetera. So I go to the hospital every day. I go to Salem Health. I go out to the coast on Fridays to North Lincoln Hospital, quite a nice hospital, small. And I can tell you that when the pandemic started in March, a lot of, not so much fear, but a lot of anxiety because it was something new and the staff wasn't sure about it and all that. At this point in time, it's business. It's caring. The business, I mean, is people aren't stressed. People aren't overly concerned. When they have a COVID patient or a rule out COVID, they know exactly what to do. They know how to take care of the patient very well. They know how to take care of themselves. So again, the tension, and there really isn't tension in the system. There was modest tension. Again, remember, this is a woman-man system. What do I mean by that? When I started 43 years ago, men, lots, women, few. Nowadays, this is run by women, and the women are doing a great job, and we men are participants, but the women of Salem Health and the whole organization just doing a fabulous job. Let's talk a little bit about capacity, because there's a lot of concerns out there about capacity. This Oregon has 6,600 licensed hospital beds. Now, that's more than practical, but that's how many licensed beds. We have about 411 patients this morning with COVID in all of Oregon's hospitals. 411 out of 6,600. So we're running about 7%. So not an overwhelming number. We talk about ICU capacity, ventilator capacity. We have about 1,000 ICU beds. We have about 40 people COVID in ventilators right now in our state. Now, again, not an overwhelming number. Now, we've identified some issues in our healthcare delivery system. We've been very focused up to now about following manufacturing models in terms of delivering healthcare. And what that means is exactly what you need at the moment you need it to take care of the patient, not a lot of reserve, no waste, no extra beds, no extra capacity, just have them filled 80, 90%. Well, obviously, if you have even several hundred in a system that theoretically can take care of 6,600, if you have several hundred people that come in and it's stressing your system, we need to rethink this from a public health point of view. We need to have a system in place that can potentially take in tens of thousands of people if we have our great earthquake. I mean, that's not gonna be 400 people in the hospital. That might be 40,000 people that need the hospital, or 400,000 if it's god awful. So we have some real issues to learn. But what we can do right now, and we did this in March, is if we have a huge surge in the number of patients that are coming in and there's a ramp up in the infection, and I'll talk about that, we can shut down medicine again. We shut down medicine in March. We probably cleared out 60% of the capacity. So a lot of our capacity is for ongoing services that we can temporarily put aside. We don't like to, but we can. So again, the amount being used right now by COVID is actually fairly small. We have a system that hasn't provided a lot of margin. We in medicine can shut it down and clear out probably about 50 or 60% of the ongoing capacity. So it looks like we have plenty. It looks like we have plenty. So I want people to keep that in mind for right now. Now, what happened with COVID was a virus in China mutated probably some years ago. Remember the bats, people, And then last winter, the major communication hubs, Beijing and China, Wuhan, and then you look into Northern Europe, you look into the United States and in New York, you look at Seattle, LA. So people flew and traveled, and the virus was brought all around the world. And in those winter months, in those places that were first struck, especially the densely populated ones, the virus moved very fast, very quickly. And remember, we talked about masks, social distancing, no events with thousands of people as a way to flatten the curve. And what flatten the curve really means is not ultimately prevent infections, but to spread out the time at which people get infected. So you're probably not gonna change the number ultimately infected by that way just by doing that, but you'll slow the process. So instead of everybody in the world getting infected in a year, it might take 3, 4, 5 years. A huge advantage of that is if you can come up with a vaccine quickly and you don't have everybody infected, then you can start vaccinating people and actually prevent infection, prevent disease, and prevent deaths. So the virus struck in the winter pretty aggressively, and then it kind of quieted down a little bit during the spring and summer months and early fall. But again, it was moving through society, because remember, most people that are infected, a lot of asymptomatic or minimally symptomatic. So asymptomatic, minimally symptomatic people spread this virus and spread this infection. So now what we have is coming back into those cold winter and fall months, and we're seeing more infections and more hospitalizations. And there's a plea from our leadership to do what we can to protect ourselves, protect our families, protect our communities, and really protect the world. So it certainly makes sense to heed the advice. When you go out, wear your mask. When you're at home, you're okay. Keep the number of people that you're in communication with down as much as possible. Use social distancing. We've shut down the big events, all very practical things, because again, we're trying to flatten the curve, which is slow the spread of infection while we await the two great vaccine options and even more that are coming out. We're gonna really start getting vaccinated probably by the end of December. I'm a healthcare worker in the front lines. Shots going in here, wherever they shoot you. There's never been any vaccine more studied. I know it's quick. The technology to actually bring this forward started 10 years ago. So they've been working on this for a decade in essence. They perfected it. They have tens of thousands of people enrolled. So again, I will get my vaccine so that again, I can go back to a more normal life, and I'll be encouraging you to do the same thing. So again, right now we want to slow the spread of the infection, wear your mask, stay separated, do the practical things that you know that you need to do to keep it as safe as possible and to minimize the infection and the spread. Couple comments on government response. We elect people in political leadership who are our friends and neighbors and people in our community to lead us by being right next to us, standing side by side with us in this process. And this is a challenge, this is a big leadership challenge. So we need our political leadership and our technology leadership and our medical leadership and all the experts that can help us, who are standing equal with us, to give us the best advice and the best recommendations and tell us what to do. And really, they need to step back a little bit and give us some freedom and room to space to operate, because every situation is different. My medical practice, a hospital, your grocery business, your spa, whatever, it's all different. But again, the basic principles are the same in terms of separation. We're going to mask. We're going to prevent, we don't want large groups of people to come together to be protective, especially right now as we're so clear to getting rid of this. But again, a lot of freedom with the people. The other issue is correction should be gentle. It should not be harsh. When you make harsh and strict rules and really harsh punishments, fines, jail time is a threat, people resist that. And you're actually less likely to get people to follow your lead. So what the government needs to do is be out there with us, standing side by side, helping us, encouraging us, gentle correction when you're off track, not harsh punishment. That is the absolute wrong way to go. So I'd ask our political leadership to think about that. And finally, our small businesses are really, really, really being hammered now. I have a large business as part of our medical practice. We have 150 employees. We have 25 providers. We stretch from Woodburn to Corvallis to the coast, from Silverton. And actually for the bigger groups, that early relief was very important to us. It wasn't hard to apply for, and actually the money flowed to us. And a lot of the bigger entities got that. State government is doing well. We saw the budget projections. They have money. They're paying their employees. Small men and women, individual business people who are being asked in many ways to allow their business to fail by shutting down, they need the help from the state government. They need the help right now from the state government. They need money. They need checks. When you see someone get up on the media and say, I'm going to resist this government requirement, they're not doing it to be difficult. They're doing it because they're about ready to die in terms of their business, and they just can't see all that work going away. So we've taken care of the individual person by our unemployment and enhanced unemployment with $600 a week and now $300. We need to keep supporting people if they can't work. And we've taken care of the big businesses, and we've taken care of the government entities, and the pensioners are okay. Let's not forget the small businessman and woman who needs cash support at this time. And I urge our state officials to step in. Finally, on the vaccine front, fabulous. We're going to have millions of doses available next year. Don't be afraid of it. Vaccines save lives. It's going to bring our world back to normal. And I'm really happy right now at this time. I can see the end of the great pandemic of 2020. In our family, we're already planning for traveling at the end of next summer. We think that it's likely that the vaccine and the number of cases, people that have already been infected that will have innate resistance and then vaccinate people, it's going to come back. The economy is going to come back. Travel is going to come back. So right now, dig in, stay distanced, wear your mask, don't gather in large groups. We're delaying infections by doing that. We're not preventing so much, but we're delaying. But that delay can turn into prevention with the addition of vaccines. And they're coming, and they're right on the cusp. So again, be hopeful. Get through this holiday season. We'll remember it as a strange holiday season, but it's a time we came together and we stood together and we saved our society and we kept our society going, and brighter days are coming. Have a great day.